at them.
Up and at them.
Up and at them.
Up and at them.
Up and at them.
Alright everybody, and welcome to episode 298 of the 9 Years podcast. I am Nick Draper. I am joined, as always, by the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deakins, aka Doogie Howser, MD, but we'll come on to that more in a moment. Thank you very much for downloading the show this week. However you are listening, whether it be through Apple or Google Podcasts or Spotify or YouTube or 9yrspodcast.org. And I reference that because the website is where you will find links under the, well, under the title for this episode this week to a few blogs that were written this week. We're going to be discussing those, as well as looking ahead to the trip to Bradford on Saturday and looking back at last week's defeat to Carlisle. Stu, should we get the football out of the way very quickly first? Defeat at Carlisle 2-1. Fourth defeat in a row in the league. Fifth defeat in six. Well, we scored. That's always good. Ayuba Sal with a very well-taken goal to equalise midway through the second half, having gone 1-0 down on the stroke of half-time. We then lost to a headed, well, quite a late goal. Last 15, lost 10. Christian Dennis, who again we highlighted on the podcast last week as a threat, scoring the goal. I suppose, Stu, what we should say is that we went into that game, Nathan Young-Coombs not on the team sheet, and it's since been revealed that he will be out for some time, an unspecific amount of time, with an unspecific knee injury. When details are that unspecific, I think we are having our, well, we're having the blow cushioned, because people don't want to say quite how bad it is. Is that fair?
Yeah, it was an update that provided more questions than it provided answers, didn't it, on one of those. It could be a case that he's gone for a scan and they might, you know, sometimes there's a lot of bruising around certain injuries and it might be a case they want to do a second scan or Brentford are going to do their own. Because let's be fair, you know, the medical facilities from us compared to Brentford are going to be massive, aren't they, in difference. So maybe it's more that, but it's definitely, you're right, I think it's definitely setting us up for him being out for a significant amount of time. And do you know what? I think the problem is sometimes when you get players like this, I remember Michael Owen when he first, I'm not comparing him to Michael Owen, but I'm just, you know, sometimes when players are decent, they get more injuries, they get more knocks, don't they, pick up. And Michael Owen was like Roadrunner when he first joined, joined Liverpool. And then by the end of it, he was, I think I could have beat him in a race off the amount of injuries he had.
When you said players, when they're, you know, quite talented, when they're quite young and stuff, they tend to pick up more injuries. Liam Trott had a pretty good injury record, didn't he? Never missed a game through injury.
Everyone run past him, didn't they? Do you know what I mean? Like, he could never catch up. Liam Trott. I saw someone say, like, our signings are this is really equivalent of sores on the wardrobe.
Oh, wow.
He doesn't even get named as Trotter now.
It's just a wardrobe.
Yeah, bless him. We should tell what, right? We know he's legend. I'll say legend appearances, but it'd be good to have him come back when he come on the pitch. It probably might need to bring him out about 10 minutes early just so he can get onto the centre spot in time.
So rude about Liam Trotter, Stu. Honestly, it's like you've got a vendetta. Honestly, I'd never speak of such a player in such a way. Anyway. So Nathan Coombs out for an unspecific spell. I don't think we'll see it before Christmas. And it's not anything we're doing. It's one of those things. But Marcus Force, Aaron Presley, Nathan Young Coombs, Brentford, if you want to get your strikers injured, send them on loan to us, because that's what's going to happen, no doubt. Just a quick one on, we don't spend too long on it. The quick one on the defeat to Carlisle. What did you make of how we set up? Did you see it as a 3-5-2? Did you see it as a 3-4-3? Obviously, Ayuba Sal comes in, I thought, to replace Nathan Young-Coombs. So the 3-5-2 that we saw at the start of the season. Or did you think it was more a 3-4-3 with Ethan Chislett pushed forward as one of the three and then Gunter and Curry pushed wide?
It looked that way. It looked that way. It's interesting playing Curry where he was, wasn't it? I thought we got Magoma forward a bit more. George Marsh, I just felt we isolated him in midfield. It was just difficult to get ourselves in the game, really. But hey, where have we seen that before on that side of it? But what I would say, do you know what? I was impressed with Carlisle. I thought Patrick, for them, hey, look, he got Towler on a booking, didn't he, early on? Literally, I don't know if you've seen the booking that Towler got, but do you remember years ago when Gareth Bale he beat a player, beat a Barcelona player on the touchline and beat him by going off the pitch, basically going the long way round?
Yeah.
This is what Patrick done, showed him a fresh pair of eggs and got booked on it. And he was a pain in the proverbials all game, to be honest with you.
Do you mean a clean pair of heels?
Oh, yeah. No,
I was thinking for ages, fresh pair of legs. I was thinking,
I was thinking, that don't sound right. But basically, he just beat him on the wrong side.
Yeah.
And after that, we just didn't want to pick him up. But just a disjointed performance for us. And the irony was that the goal we got, which was after 8 consecutive halves without scoring a goal, was from a long ball.
Yeah, route one. Proper old school Wimbledon. Love
great
it.
Finish.
Yeah.
Great finish.
I mean, Josh Davison wins the flick and Ayoub's first touch is great. It's a little bit behind him, just flicks it into his path. We've seen Ayoub, though, in those situations, especially the first half of last season. One-on-ones just put them away. If I remember correctly, at Doncaster, he missed one in the first half, and we were all thinking that was pretty poor. But then the second half, he got one, and it was instant shot away. And then after that, like you say, Accrington as well, gets those positions. Finish as well. Talented boy. Josh Davison, talented boy. Should perhaps be doing, not talking about the individuals, but perhaps with such individuals in the team, we should perhaps be performing a little better.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? You know, you look at the team and you think it should be doing better than what it is, but it isn't for some reason. I just think we just need a bit more on the front foot.
Adam. You
know, yeah, but that's the way it is, isn't it? And that's the way Johnny wants to play. And hey, look, we're 9 games in and we're coming up. We're coming up to, I look 5 games ahead and we're coming up to horrible games. Horrible in all different ways.
Yeah, we'll preview Bradford later, but Bradford away next. Colchester at home the following
big
week.
London, big London derby.
Okay, all right.
Do you know what? Seriously, the last time Sutton come to, played at our place.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking about Colchester, and I was thinking...
No, sorry.
Yeah, that's why I was umming and erring over Portsmouth to Plymouth again.
That's the South of England derby. you would call it that. then Sutton coming to our place and I don't know. I don't want to be turned over by Sutton.
No, I'm dreading it. I am dreading it. I don't think I've dreaded a fixture more. And the problem is I need to get rid of it because I think that mentality, if we don't get some good results over the next couple of weeks, could shift through to the entire club and then we're on a hiding to nothing. If you start to dread something and fear it, it's like animals. They can smell fear.
Do you know what? I spoke to someone, I won't name the names, but they haven't been back to Ballane for a season or a bit, and just said they could sense it at Northampton. Could just sense.
Yeah.
And I went, it's interesting. Maybe I've just got used to that as being a norm because I couldn't sense it, but maybe that's where we are. We're all a little bit. The goal goes in against Northampton and you could hear a pin drop.
Yeah.
Yeah, and equally at Carlisle, was anybody surprised at the late goal?
No.
And it's terrible defending, by the way. It's just terrible.
Both goals, I think Johnny Jackson called it correctly, both goals are from players in wide positions being able to cut inside and either get a shot away or a cross away. And you saw Alex Pearce's reaction following the second goal. Then it's Paul Ossu, show him out. Show him out. Don't show him in.
Now, Paul Ossi's not showing him anywhere. He's not tight enough, and his body shape is not even sending him. It's just not sending him anywhere. Mm. It's just when you put balls in, ball flick, And then Jack Curry gets done on a, you know, like I say, we spoke about Dennis, didn't we? And he's obviously a goal scorer and was on the move. But you just look at it and go, avoidable but predictable.
Quite a nice phrase, actually. Avoidable but predictable. Yeah, I like that one. You talk about having just an atmosphere around a stadium. It was something you mentioned earlier in terms of, yeah, results aren't great, as we said. It's 5 defeats and 6-4 and a bounce. Sometimes performances worry you more than results. And I just sometimes give an indication of this, because we're going to come on to people. There are people out there. You've written a couple of blogs this week. Mark Hendricks obviously wrote a long piece as well. It sparked a load of debate on social media. And there are people that are still saying, look, you're overreacting to a few defeats. If we'd won a few, it'd be fine, whatever, what have you. But then I say it's more than just the defeats at the moment. It's like this whole atmosphere around the place. And it just reminded me of when Luton were in the conference and they'd failed in the playoffs 3 consecutive seasons. In their 4th season, they didn't get anywhere near the playoffs and they'd actually got rid of their manager. And John Steele came in towards the end of the season. And they had a game against Grimsby Town at Kenilworth Road. I went to this. This is why I know this. Went up to it. And Sam Hatton played for Grimsby that night, bizarrely. It ended a 1-1 draw. But walking away, as you walk away and down Kenilworth Road after the game, the place was buzzing because even though it was only a draw, the performance, they knew that the performance, they'd seen something in the performance that told them they're onto something here. And then the following season, they cantered to the league. They smashed the league the following season. And you can get a vibe from performances more so than results. And I think that's where we are at the moment. We're not seeing on the pitch anything that's really enthusing us, aside from flashes of quality, like we said, from the talented players we've got in the squad, like Asau, like Davison, like Magoma. But I was going to say, this whole atmosphere seems to be, correct me if I'm wrong, seems to be the spark of your writing this week.
Yeah, it wasn't an overreaction. I just don't do that. And I give people chances. It's not even that the Johnny Jackson situation just is a weird one. I just look at the manager sort of side of it. You know, it's 2022. We look at it, you know, we finished 2021 winning at Accrington, and then nearly winning at Wickham. And then we finished it by going to Oxford and God knows what happens there.
Not turning up, yeah.
Yeah. But it just feels like the whole year side of it. And it just, I suppose my sort of thinking of it is it's just become the norm and acceptance that we lose. And hey, look, Joe, I'm a Wimbledon fan. So if I ever support Wimbledon because I thought they were going to win all the games, then I'm stupid. But you look at performances, and sometimes you see managers go, do you know what? The performance was good, but the result, we didn't get the result, judge on the performance. But the performances this year, in general, you know, look, we went, 20-something games without winning a game, and we didn't really like winning them. And I suppose it's just a case of, we fought in League One to stay up. And League One, I've heard people say it wasn't that great a league last year with Charlton and Ipswich both finished mid-table, so it can't be that. You know, it was a strong league and it was big names. And then you finally get relegated and then you look, in the summer, we needed a managing director or CEO, needed a head of football operations, needed a manager. And it just feels like, it feels the decisions we're making are not good decisions. And don't get me wrong, you can make bad decisions, but if you consistently make bad decisions, why are you making those bad decisions? And I look this season, and I just think we've gone from a manager who was looking to build for the future, academy and that sort of side of it. And then, you know, we've gone for Johnny Jackson. It just makes me wonder what is his objective, because he's got a totally different way of playing. Personnel is different. And it just feels, I look at Johnny Jackson at the moment, and correct me if you think differently, but I look at a person who's a little bit struggling in terms of what to do. Is this basically like, have we got, I've said to you last week, you know, have we got a curse on the Plough Lane? Because I would go and piss in every corner and I'll do it twice if I can. But it just feels, I just look at its body language, and it's maybe even my body language. Like, I think everyone's body language is a little bit like, I can't see it just doesn't feel infused. And it just feels to me that we don't have, I'm at a stage now where I'm thinking, do you know what? We've done what we can. We've hit a ceiling, done really, really well. but there is something at the moment at the club that stinks, and it ain't King's Meadows. What was the allotment zone? You know, when we can spend a stinking way over at King's Meadow. Just sewage. You know what I mean? It's a stink somewhere, and it's not blaming individuals, but it's just starting to realise what's going on, and we are just in a lull, and it's not just because we're Elite Two. It's been a year at least in the making.
Johnny Jackson didn't look... He looks a bit beaten up after Northampton and Carlisle, I think it's fair to say. I'm not sure...
Yeah,
his sleep has been particularly great at the moment. You said what his objective is for the season. Well, it's in black and white. It's a budget that's good for promotion/playoffs. That is in black and white. That is in meeting minutes that were published on the official website. So I thought, when I read that, I thought it was unrealistic in the extreme. You don't have six seasons of struggle at the bottom of League One, culminating in half a year where you've not won a single game of football, and you don't turn that around in a summer. It's not going to happen, especially when you've got teams with upward momentum coming the other direction. So I thought that was always unrealistic and an unfair expectation. I'm not sure how much of the fan base really thought that was going to be the case. I'll tell you what I did think. I thought at the start of the season, Stu, I said to you, it's going to be fun on the podcast this year because we're going to have lots of wins, or a lot more. We're still going to win more games, and there's going to be less pressure because there's no expectancy, there's no threat of relegation. Promotion is not be all and end all. I thought it would just be a nice, fun season we could actually just relax and enjoy a bit. And here we are, we're not in October, and we're having conversations like the ones we're having for a couple of weeks in a row.
Yeah, there's no progression, and everything just feels slow. So, you know, we now know we need a managing director. And we're hoping we're going to hear something about that shortly. We need a head of football operation. I feel we've just done things in the wrong order. And I think this is why I find it very difficult to be critical of Johnny Jackson, because ultimately I just think he's coming at a terrible time. You know, you've got a manager who's inexperienced. You know, he had his experience at Charlton, and he's come in and he's been given, as you say, a budget for promotion. I think that's rubbish. I mean, take truth with you. And I don't get this squad. I just don't get this. The depth of the squad, I don't get it unless we pay ridiculous salaries. I just don't get it. My eyes are telling me different to what factually is being said, that we've got, you know, a similar budget to last year. I don't buy it. I really don't. And we've got good individuals, but we haven't got any strength. And you can see that. I think like teams like Mansfield average like four or five subs a game. We average three or four, mainly because I think we've got game changers on the bench. If I'm being honest with you, and that's it's no disrespect, but I find it very difficult to. I sometimes think, like, you know, Bartley comes on. No disrespect to Bartley, but he was at Cotties, as we said, Cottiswood United last year. Needs a loan. You know, we're sort of, and now Nathan Young Coombs getting injured. It now even compounds it, doesn't it? You know, it's so. You know, for me, I know people will start looking at a manager, four defeats on the spin, five out of the last six, I think we've lost.
Yeah.
Going to a terrible game at Bradford, need like a hole in the head. And then we get games that we should win. They're dangerous games, as you know, the games you should win. And do you know what? It feels, I think, in a way, right. You know, like we look at the strength of teams in League One, I think we've actually underestimated how much of a drop into League Two it is, in terms of, no disrespect to Colchester, Barrow, all those sort of sides. But, you know, League One had really big teams in terms of stature of teams, didn't they? And I think we've all been affected by this low. And it's no disrespect, you know, but losing a Carlisle makes me sound like some sort of, like, I don't know, think we should win every game. But losing to teams and losing when I feel like we just don't have any I don't see any progress. I don't see any progress in our formation, on a system, and it feels like it's just a little bit like going through the motions. And unfortunately, that's what it feels like me with the back office of the club, going through motions, just generally because we're doing the same things, we're making the same mistakes. And, you know, Groundhog Day, we've got Donald Trump elections coming up, and I'm sitting there going, I think you need Mother Teresa to come in here at the moment and do something, or some sort of like genius or godlike character. Because you can have all the will in the world, but you haven't got the structure at the club, and that does come down to finances.
Yeah, and that then brings us on to the crux of your... Well, you wrote two blogs this week, Stu. The first one was very much about the model and the structure of the club. Mark Hendrick wrote a similar blog on the same line. Your second blog was more to do with tactics and stuff like that. We probably won't delve into that one as much. But certainly the crux of the two, you and Mark's main blogs, as we'll call them, talked about the model, wondered whether it was working, and whether it's time we looked at relinquishing control as the trust or as a fans-owned club. It's really difficult on this one because it's finding the right words, and I want to speak really carefully and really precisely. I think what's happened in the discussion since then, as you would expect, is that it's come down to a very binary private ownership versus fan ownership, one or the other. It's almost like a Brexit vote, and it's so black and white. And I think there's a lot of nuance in it that is perhaps being missed. I'm not sure either side is really listening to the other, if I'm being honest with you.
Yeah,
it is like a Brexit vote where someone's gone, this is going to, I want to vote leave, I want to vote remain, give me your arguments, I'm not even going to consider them.
Yeah.
And we're not going to move forward with that at any point. You could argue, what does moving forward look like at this point? You said the managing director comes in within the existing model. And then look, as it stands, there's no mechanism, no movement, no actual likelihood of us selling the club at this precise moment in time. There's nothing on the table. It's not something that we're going to be talking about next week as, oh, look, by the way, a vote's coming up whether we sell the club. We're not in that position right now. The first step instead of moving forward seems to be this appointment of a managing director. They've got such a massive, they've got the biggest job. Oh, my word. But my point has always been, and people disagree with me on this one, my point in the nuance is, as it stands, in the fan-owned model that we've got, that person, whoever he or she is, might be Harriet Eastman. It's not, but that's a private joke for a few of you out there. they've got to be told, you're running this show. You are the individual who is running this show. Because at the moment, I don't know who is. I don't think it works as a collective. I think a collective takes too long to get any decisions made. I think day to day, somebody has to lead and have the vision to lead and be able to actually be supported in doing that. And that's not to say that they're going to be infallible and not make mistakes, but we can't be on their shoulders the whole. It'd be impossible. It'd be like me as a classroom teacher having someone on my shoulder, having the head teacher on my shoulder the whole time going, oh, no, actually, no, don't do that. Da-da-da. No, actually, yeah, well, now you can do that, but no, you can't do that. It would be impossible. Somebody, one person has to have a single soul vision for us. Now, that could be the managing director if the Dons Trust Board allow it. Or, which is what I think you're pushing for, it could be someone to come in externally, take control of the whole show and go from there. Is that fair? Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, where do we start? It's an interesting one, isn't it? You know, the managing director, I think the biggest thing we seem to miss is, you know, these big titles, head of football operations and managing directors, but they need staff below them and they need volume of staff. And I just think we are such a lean organisation. We do things as cheaply as possible because we try and keep the playing squad budget as big as it can, because on a Saturday or Tuesday night at 7:45, the fans, that's what they see. They see what, you know, so we want to have the best budget, but we just miss, we underfund, or we just can't fund the back office and the people. And I think, you know, I said about a managing director needing to be some sort of god, but they're going to have a really, really tough job. And again, you're right, they're working with the Dons Trust Board, they're part of the PLC. But I think the Dons Trust Board have lost understanding of what they stand for. I think since we've gone to Plough Lane, or before Plough Lane in 2019, and that, if you look at a Plough Lane bond, then getting the stadium done, then get a ticket in, COVID, there's so many things that they've had to do. And I just looked at their mission statement today to try and just remind myself of what we wanted them to do. Because I think they've forgotten, not deliberately, but I just think it's an impossible job. And I think we're asking so much of people now that we are missing the thing that is staring us right in the face. And that's criminal. You know, I've said this already, we're so scared of the past. We're so scared of it that we're actually scared. We just can't plan for moving forward. You know, I listened to the Woman's Had a Dream podcast today with Danny, and Danny says something that struck me of, he's talking about, you know, have we gone as far as we can? You know, why are the other clubs, and he mentioned a team that I totally forgot about. He mentioned Brentford, Wickham, Pompey. He said, and he asked a question, have we spoke to them about what made them make that decision to relinquish their control of the trust? And it was just great, such a great open question. And that's the thing, it's discussion. It's not me saying, I think we can sell out in 2 months. We can't, we know that. It's ridiculous, these things. But we don't want to have this discussion. It gets shot down so many times because it's, and as you say, it's divisive like a Brexit. Oh, you want to sell out as really bad owners. I know all the bad owners. I've been told them so many times. But it is a question that, you know, it's a question. Why did these clubs relinquish control? Because as much as we lost our club to Milton Keynes, you look at Wrexham, bad owner. Brentford, bad owners. Pompey, you know, so what makes us different? Are we martyrs for this sort of fan-owned model because we want to show off? Because no one else is following it. No one else is following it. And I get a little bit, I've said to you before, haven't I? This thing of the greatest story in football is great on the surface. It's a great surface motto. But underneath that, mate, we are struggling like mad underneath it. And we just want to, and you know, we want it in a way, just make it work. But when do we start thinking, is it working? And we can't keep putting the pressure on these people on the Dodge Trust board. Can't keep putting the pressure on them. It's ridiculous. They don't get the stuff done in their manifesto. The manifestos can come out in a couple of weeks, right? And we're going to do the hustings. And we'll be unbiased. That's no problem at all about that. But the manifestos are not worth the paper they're on. They really are not. Mm. Because when they come in, they just firefight it.
Mm.
They just firefight. You know, they want to do this, want to have a strategy, want to plan. But we can't plan. We refuse to plan. We can't plan. And it's just a case of now going, let's have this discussion. What are our deadlines? Because outside investment isn't working, because who wants to put money in? Rich people don't get rich by giving it away for nothing. You know, it's not like you're going, Nick, you know what, you've got a spare £1 million, just give it to us. You can come in the boardroom a little bit and stuff like that. You're not going to do it. And I think we just need to get a bit real. And, you know, hoping that this managing director is going to come in. Now, how long do we give him? Do we give him a year? We're a year down the line and nothing's improved. How long do you give a manager? Because realistically, I think, Johnny, we need to give some sort of manager a season. But we're already booing after Northampton. You know, it's not even Christmas yet.
It's not even Halloween.
I've gone around again, haven't I? I just don't know. I just fed up this nonsense of us thinking that we should be a martyr. And like I say, Danny was on the money today. It really was a light bulb moment. Have we spoken to people? Why did they relinquish? Because let's be fair, they're doing all right at some of these clubs.
Portsmouth are the one I want to pick up on. And Wickham, I'm not really too familiar with the Brentford situation, if I'm being honest with you. But I look at Portsmouth and I go, there's a club with a stadium that holds, what, 20,000 people? So if they were to be self-funding in the way that we are intending to be, then you'd say, well, they should be in a lot stronger position than we are. But obviously they must have felt, okay, I'm speaking for them here, but this is what I'm thinking. They must have felt that their expectations of where they wanted the club to go, they could not finance. Right? Rightly or wrongly, because a lot of this means that an individual will be playing money in and clubs might be, as we know at the championship level, spending more wages than they're actually bringing money in pretty much to every single club with the exception of Luton. So I had to get that in. But there's an example of a great owner.
Great example.
But the thing I always used to say with Luton was, is when people say, we're fan-owned. I'm like, well, Luton are fan-owned. They're just privately owned, but they're privately owned by a group of fans. But anyway, that's another argument for another day.
Yeah.
Portsmouth, Wickham, similarly, again, they probably sold out because whatever their expectations are, I don't think that they're, at the time, I wouldn't have thought they'd have been imagining they'd have been in the championship as they were for a couple of years ago in lockdown season.
Yeah.
Or performing as well as they have done over the last couple of years, although obviously money has gone into the playing squad. But they must have thought for their expectations, they might have been more modest at the time, but they still didn't think with the size of club they are naturally that they would be able to finance that. We have to be honest and say, we can finance this football club ourselves off the stadium. Now we've got it, the Holy Grail for us. We can finance to, and then we have to say what we think we can get to and accept that that is our ceiling. And that is fine, whatever that might be. Clearly, we are delayed in doing that. And this is the problem now. Because of the bonds, because of the debt we got into building the stadium at a reduced capacity, may I add as well. So not even the full capacity. We are delayed in having that ability to be able to say clearly, good, we're in a strong financial position. We can generate spending on the playing squad and on the football side of this amount. It will take us this far. This is where we're going to go. I don't think, as you said, Stu, anyone's ever actually revealed or unveiled or said what they think that line is going to be.
Knows.
Because, well, no, but nobody knows. No. But I also think you make the point there of the red lines. At what point do you prioritise what goes on the pitch as opposed to the model that we've got as being fan owned and people wanting to protect it? Now, I've said I'm not wedded to fan ownership, but if you were to ask me, and this is where I think we've gone wrong with previous surveys, if you were to ask people, would you like AFC Wimbledon to be remain fan owned? Yeah, if you ask me that question, I'd be like, yes, I would. I would prefer. There's no but in there. There is a line where it comes to. My but right now would be, and this is where I said earlier about nuance in the discussion, so bear with me before you react, because I know what people say when I first say this.
Yeah.
If I'm given the choice between being fan-owned and being non-league and being privately owned and being football league, not going to lie, I'm going to choose privately owned and football league. I cannot face going back into non-league. I can't do it. I've only had to do it once. It was great. It's great when you're on the way up. Luton, when you're on the way down and stagnating, it sucks. It sucks for teams like Southend and York, and Oldham are finding this out, okay? I just don't think I could go back there, all right? There are some fans in our fan base that have done it twice. Fair play to them. That's incredible. I take my hat off to you the same way I take my hat to the 164 fans that went up to Carlisle on the weekend. All right, but that is my red line. Now, the argument that always comes back, and this is why I say people don't really listen to each other, or there's no nuance in the conversation, the argument comes back is, why can't you be fan-owned and in the Football League and successful? My argument put to that is, the answer is, I don't know that, but no one can guarantee it either way. We cannot guarantee it. So, unfortunately, the argument becomes a little bit of a bit unfalsifiable on both sides. Neither side can actually definitively say one way or the other. But what I am saying is it's not about the choice of the two things. It is simply saying that when it comes to fan ownership, yes, I'd like to stay fan owned, but there is a limit to how far I will go staying fan owned. And that is my limit. All right. I'm not saying it's one or the other, or it's ever just that binary choice. What I'm saying is, in terms of fan ownership, that is my limit. And I think a lot of people are in the same position as me. If you were to ask people, do you want to stay fan owned forever, no matter what division we're in, if we go back to Ryman Premier, I think people would start to go, okay.
But you just can't, and I agree with you, but you can't just pick when your red line is. So is your red line, I want to stay in the conference is my red line, or League Two is my red line. Well, you can stumble into a relegation quite easily. We've seen teams do that. And once what goes in, Chesterfield, new stadium, we know that already. I had someone the other day say, well, really rinsed in that division. Let's not kid ourselves on that. But you know what? I think interesting you said about the stadium. We have a stadium that is fit to. It's got three temporary stands, but it's built in a way to progress and go up to 20,000. Okay, we haven't even got the state. When we agreed to go ahead with the ground and we realised we had £11 million shortfall. We stopped on certain things. We didn't complete on certain things. The ground is by no means finished, even in its current state. And also a ground of plough lane size needs to be upkept. It needs sweeping, it needs maintenance. I don't even think we've got the stuff on the maintenance because we tied ourselves with the plough lane bond, which it's friendly debt. But anyone who read the financial picture going, we need 3.2 million when it matures in 2025 scares the shit out of me. It really does. And equally, the model going, well, we're going to have to sell. Well, Redoni is the biggest transfer fee we've ever got. It's not like we did it every season. And our model has gone away from long-term under Robbo to short-term under JJ. Mm-hmm. So I just think we just need to have this discussion. There are red lines, but I get a little bit fed up now being reminded of Milton Keynes. It does. Yes, it happened. It caught a lot of us. You know, I was naive to it. And maybe I'm being naive again. But the game is about money now. I saw it. It's about money. And fair game looks like it's going to get kicked down the road again. Doesn't look like it's going to go ahead or it needs to be put in. It's a money game. And as owners, we don't have that money. We have to accept when the right time is. You know, if we're good owners. We talk about bad owners. Well, at the moment, I think we're bad owners by not even discussing a plan. And we don't have a plan and we keep knocking it out. And you're right. You know, the surveys, when they're done, they're very restrictive. Yes or no answers. I think that's deliberate, if I'm being honest with you. We need to have discussions. Because there are good owners out there. We are a very attractive club. Listen up, in London, in Wimbledon, in a very good area, great links for the community. That doesn't change. But let's just recognise that we're running on a shoestring and it's going to fall eventually. We can't keep relying on these volunteers and hoping that we're going to find the best people on the Don's Trust board. It doesn't. I thought we had the best Don's Trust board over the last couple of years and they haven't let me down. But they've not been able to do what they want to do. And if they can't do it, I have no confidence in anyone else.
Don's Trust Board, PLC Board. What do they do from this, as it stands, where do their responsibilities lie? Or where should they lie?
Well, the PLC is a day-to-day operational running, isn't it? So, you know, from their point of view, the managing director comes in with the support of Mick Buckley. And it's really, you know, keeping things on track, that sort of side of it. Day-to-day running, planning, you know, and all that sort of side of it. The Don's Trust board should be an oversight board, shouldn't be getting their hands dirty board. But yeah, we've got five places up coming up soon, haven't we? And that transitional period.
Yeah.
The Don's Trust board should be...
Stu, guess what? At the moment, AFC Wimbledon are not very good at transitions. Sorry, thank you.
I think... Joe, I don't know what the answer is. You know, we don't hear from them enough. Should we hear from them? You know, the thing is they get blamed for everything. But because they're the most visible people, we have a go at them. But a lot of stuff, it isn't their responsibility. So is it a case that people have gone and assumed that's their responsibility, i.e. picking a manager and all that sort of thing, even picking players? I don't think that's going to happen. But I don't know, to be honest with you. I think the PLC is quite an easy, you know, it should be allowed to do their job. But equally, they should be accountable. Accountability is something I've said to you a little while ago. It's so difficult to hold people accountable. On a Don's Trust board, who do you hold accountable for the things that haven't been done at the stadium? Because we had a stadium group, didn't we?
Yeah.
You know, we can't blame them now. We can do, but they're long gone.
Yeah.
It's just accountability and, you know, I was going to say this earlier, right? You know, Johnny Jackson's got slaughtered at the moment for saying about a blame culture and then gone on to blame players after Carlisle. We do that as a club. It's a culture. Mm. We blame everyone that leaves. Just easy.
I was going to say to you, like, there's no one at the club, one sole person that you can nail accountability to, except it seems the first team manager who we ship in and ship out like we're Watford.
Are we trying to be a Watford?
Ugh.
No one wants to be a Watford, do they?
No. Jesus, no.
But you're right. Do you know what? As a reputation, I don't think. Like, football's a small world. Like, if we sack Johnny Jackson, I'm not saying we should. I don't even know what you sack him on. Do you know what I mean? Playing boring football. Well, I don't know. Well, okay. I don't know how he sacked somebody when their objective is to get promotion and we're not even a quarter way through the season. And as we know from Bristol Rovers, you know, you can have a mad run, can't you?
Well, we know it ourselves, don't we, from when we went up.
Yeah, but you know, football is such a small world and we're going to get a reputation for no one to come near us because what's the point? Are we... We should be an attractive proposition. You know, John Jackson has said when they come down to Charlton, amazing atmosphere and stuff like that. But I haven't seen that for ages.
No.
And look, do you know what? We're booing. I wasn't booing. I wasn't clapping either. That's my protest. If I don't clap, that's my protest. But we're already there. So how, you know, we're going through a recession, we're going through cost of living, it's getting colder. our red line is, when do we start acting? Is it when bums on seats don't transpire? Because let's be fair, that's going to start happening soon.
Well, it's already happening. I can tell you that from my seat in the West End. See more empty seats in the half towards the away end than you do people.
That's just your brother fighting them off.
My brother's fighting. What's he done?
Frightening them off. You've got Lawrence behind you. He's probably moaning more referees as the games go on.
Probably. Sounds about right.
It's just frustration, isn't it?
Well, it is frustration. You certainly do not sack Johnny Jackson right now. Sorry, everyone. I'll tell you what, there's one thing I hope I'm consistent on many different things, but one thing will always be get behind your manager. Like, as I've said to you since we sacked Neil Ardley, what do you expect? We were well above, anyway, I had this on Twitter the other day. We're well above where we thought we'd ever be under Neil Ardley, and we got rid of him. Mm. People thought he was too negative and they were frustrated. We were overperforming being in League One. We struggled in League One year after year, no matter who's in charge. It's where we were naturally, and we finally fell. You can't just keep sacking a manager every single season, but we certainly look for, as we said to you, accountability. And I said that one person that you know is at the top and is actually dictating things. Now, nominally, that's Mick Buckley now, up until what 2 days a week, up until the new guy comes in, new person comes in.
Sorry. Well, yeah, I think the manager director comes in and then Mick Buckley goes to 2 days a week oversight on it, which makes sense. It does make sense. But then, is the accountability? And look, John, it's so difficult. And this is the thing, right? It's so difficult when you're holding people to account when actually Mick Buckley's come in and done us a favour to steady the ship. Don't know if he's getting paid lots. If he is, he's probably not getting. Sorry, don't know if he's getting paid, but if he is, I don't think he's getting paid a great sum because we don't pay well. We skin. So, accountability is everything, isn't it? But I just worry we want to blame somebody. You know, I've even seen people now blame Mick Buckley for things. And I'm sitting there going, we're not a blame culture. We are such in a blame culture. Mm-hmm. You've got to blame somebody. Somebody's got a bit of fault. Well, let's look at the owners for once. Do you know what I mean? We're owners. Are we good owners? That's the only way I can put it, because can't keep blaming people, because eventually you run out of people to blame. Which is why I'm refusing to blame Johnny Jackson, even though I'm concerned about how boring we are playing football.
You say we are an attractive proposition. I think, yeah, I make you right. I think we are an attractive proposition. We're not five stars, but we're certainly competitive. Who knows what the future holds, Stu, but we are running late.
And sounding great.
Do you want to have a quick go on Jackson 5?
Yeah, let's go for it. Let's put me in a bad mood, mood.
Well, no, let's remind ourselves of some happier times. This week it's actually Jackson 6, frustratingly, because I realised there were 6 answers when I was hoping it was just 5. But anyway, we are on a run, Stu, of 4 consecutive defeats. Bradford, by the way, haven't lost in 5. They've won their last 3. Got me thinking about winning streaks and losing streaks. It reminded me of our 7 deadly wins in 1996-97, happier times. I looked at that whole season. Did you know, Stu, that there were 6 teams in the Premier League that year that we failed to beat in the league? Can you name those 6 teams? You have 7 guesses. Off you go.
Okay. Newcastle?
That is 1.
Only because I remember when we went to Shearer's debut up at St James's Park and David Batty lobbed Sullivan from 40 yards. That's been no rubbish. Actually, we weren't rubbish. Man U?
In the league, yes.
Blackburn?
We actually did beat Blackburn. So you have, that was your third guess, but you have 4 more guesses. So you can still do it.
Aston Villa?
That was 1. In the league, we actually lost twice to them without conceding.
Sheffield Wednesday?
No. You know what? We beat them 4. That was one of the 7 deadly wins. We beat them 4-2. That was
Coventry.
Coventry. Yeah, we drew with them twice. Noel Whelan scored a volley from like the corner flag. Somehow at Selhurst Park.
Do you know how I tried to work it out? It was the teams that were boring when they visited us and bought hardly any fans. I don't know if that's the right logic or not. But do you remember we had some really... Do you remember at a time where I used to keep taking pictures of the Arthur Waite when it wasn't even open?
Yeah. I remember once we had a league game where they didn't even open it. and they put Barnsley fans behind the goal. That was Premier League.
Do you know what? I did see a picture, actually. I think Ray Arnfield does the going back, the pictures from going back years. And there was a picture of behind, I don't know what ice get confused with. You know the stand, that the two tier stand at Palace when it was split into terracing?
Yeah, the Holmesdale Road.
That's right. I always forget what it's called. You know, I was there for 10 years. There's a picture, I think it might have been Everton, and it's facing towards the Holmesdale Road, and there's one fan.
Wow.
And it's cold. And I remember it really, really well. And it was, that ground got cold when there was nobody in there.
Yeah.
It was a horrible, horrible part of London. Still is.
Still is.
But you know that some grounds are cold when no one's in it. It needs people in it just to stop the wind from swirling around. And yeah.
Do you know, that's why Stadium MK is the coldest stadium in the history of football.
They're moaning, aren't they?
Are they? Well, because they keep. Well, good. I don't care. Just die. Right. You got one more. You got one more guess.
Oh, another guess. Yeah. Oh, he was in the league at that time. It's coming. Everton.
No. See, we beat Everton. Beat them in the seven deadly wins, and we beat them at Goodison Park. We did double over them. The two you missed, you're going to kick yourself over one of them. Leicester City. We had a bit of a hoodoo against them that season. Didn't beat them in the cup either. Whereas Aston Villa and Man U, we beat in the cups, just not in the league. Villa we beat in the League Cup, and Man U in the FA Cup, of course, famously. And then the other one, two draws against Middlesbrough.
Do you know what? Aston Villa, right, very quickly, is a team that I always used to hate from a very early age when I was a Wimbledon fan. Yeah, because one game at Plough Lane in the FA Cup, They forced us to extra time, and it was so cold.
And that's the reason.
It was so cold, and I was just like, and I think Alan Cork scored late on to go through, and I just hated them for the fact that they made us go to extra time. I was really cold, and why could they just not let us score normal time? And it had been a lot. It was so cold, and I just didn't like them.
Wow,
bad, isn't it? It's bad how you build up hate for people, isn't it?
Depends who they are. I think it's fine to hate Milton Keynes and Watford and Chelsea certainly, and Elton John and Philip Schofield and Holly Willoughby. But let's not go down there right now. The pariahs of Great Britain right now. Who'd have thought it?
Do you know what? The gifts that are coming out for them and stuff like that are hilarious.
I know. Some of them are brilliant.
Hey, look. Do you know what? It is what it is, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? They just got caught. They just didn't realise there was a 24-hour camera in the Westminster Hall.
Yes.
They should be used to cameras by now, shouldn't they?
You'd have thought they'd have been used to cameras now. Philip Schofield spent much of his life trying to avoid being... Anyway, let's not go on that. Right, Bradford City on Saturday, a Valley Parade. Don't care what it's called now. It's Valley Parade. Very quickly, Stu, they're fifth. They're fifth in the league. Last week they beat Stevenage 3-0. They're unbeaten in, like I said, in five. They've won their last three. They are unbeaten at home this season in the league and have conceded just once in the league at home. That was in Europe against Warsaw. Mark Hughes is in charge. Andy Cook, formerly of Barrow, 11 goals in 11 games in all competitions this season. And when I say all competitions, I mean all proper competitions. This is league and league cup only. So, with all that going against us, I can only see a classic. You know, we've not had, Stu, I said this the other day, we've not had a win where we've been battered for 90 minutes. Like as we're recording, actually, it was on this day, 21 years ago, we went to West Brom and David Connolly got sent off in the first half with two bookings. We just sat and defended and had our goal. We protected it like the Alamo. It was a siege, blocking. 93rd minute, we go up the other end, one chance, Neil Shipperley swings his cock at it, goes in, and we get a 1-0 win. Place goes mad, right? We haven't had one of those in actual year. I can't remember when we've had a game like that. Like, years.
They are the best wins when you deserve absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And you get a goal and you can't take that smile off your face when you come out of the away end. It's just...
It's like Gillingham at Plough Lane last season with the deflected equaliser in the 97th minute. It's like, you didn't... When are we going to... So maybe Saturday is that day when we finally get that win out of nowhere.
Yeah, it is. It's where you just feel like you've lost the game. I still think we lost that game against Gingham because that late goal counted, like it was in Europe, it counted as two.
Well, it relegated us in the end, didn't it?
Yeah, true. Hey, look, we're getting nothing at Bradford. Bradford's a tough game anyway. I always felt it's going to take probably 5, 6, 7 games. Mark Hughes to he's still relatively new at that level. I know it sounds silly, but he is. But his contacts and stuff with some of the loans they've got, yeah, I think it's a very tough game. Bradford being Stevenage 3-0, who I think are, you know, Stevenage are always going to be decent under Mr. Evans. Yeah, I think they get a decent crowd there as well. I think the expectation and the excitement, it's very difficult to get excited if you live in Bradford. I think it'd be I think we get beat. And I'd love to say that, you know, or we can sit there for a draw, but I don't think we can sit. I just don't think we can, like you say, I just don't think we can sit deep and get a draw. We just don't have that sort of luck.
All that said, 2-0 win for us. You can feel it coming. We'll get an early goal out of nowhere. One shot flies in the top, Paris top corner out of nowhere. We defend, break away 5 minutes from time. Bradford fans steam for the exits. The 150 so fans that have gone up travelling. We can see you sneaking out. And there we go. Believe, people. Believe. Anything can happen.
Yes. And it won't.
On that note, thank you very much for joining me this week, Stu.
That's okay.
Your blog and Mark Hendricks' blog, we will link to on the description for this episode on our website, 9yrspodcast.org. And a quick shout out as well, our website, as well as the podcast this year, brought to you in association, of course, with Freddie Flaxman. Thank you very much for listening. I'm going to sign off, as I usually do, but with a quick tip of my hat as well to Paige, who has returned to a different wrestling organization, but she was in Bret Hart colors when she did so. So that was fantastic for me for various reasons. God, that sounds grim. Alexa Bliss. Bag first, milk last. 2 + 2 = 4. And we'll speak to you again next week.
Oh, bless.